Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. We are going to go back in time a little bit, a time before we were in a pandemic, a time when we could sit together in bars and actually have conversations. And the conversation that I'm going to have today is with Nick Sinitko. He's the wine director of Campfire, a really fantastic restaurant and bar in Carlsbad, California, which is North County, San Diego, which is where I'm from. And a few months back, before everything kind of got weird, we sat down and talked about music and booze and his band, Drug Hunt. And fortunately, Campfire is open, so if you find yourself in San Diego, you should definitely check them out. They take reservations. They have a large outdoor seating area, which they had before the pandemic handily, and it's well worth a visit. So without further ado, let's talk to Nick about music and booze and wine. Lots of wine talk.
Yeah, let me do that. Okay, cool. Again, thank you so much. Sure. I really appreciate it. So I always like to start these things. Tell me about you. Who are you and where you work and all that kind of stuff?
Okay. My name is Nick Sinitko, and I am currently at Campfire up in Carlsbad. And our sister restaurant, Jeune et Jolie, which is like a block away. We opened in December. Mm-hmm. But mostly at Campfire. And I'm behind the bar and running the wine program there. I like to focus on natural wine there. And have an amazing beverage program ran by Layla Kapp, who's kind of our captain for Black Adventure. So he's an amazing guy. It's an honor to work with him and our chefs. So I do that. And then I'm also in a band called Drug Hunt.
Drug Hunt.
Hunting. Yes.
That's what I thought it was at first, and then I'm like, wait, did I have that wrong?
Although, funnily enough, Drug Hunt was actually with the HUT. We started there, and I think just through talking and like slurring our words, it turned into Drug Hunt, and we just ended up there. So, the name is. I play keyboards.
Oh, really?
Yeah, keyboards, percussion, backup vocals. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm a drummer at heart, but I play percussively on the keyboard, I guess.
You're still doing rhythm.
Yeah,
in a way. Basically. So.
Rhythm section, sort of. So.
What is your band like? What is this band like?
So this particular band, we kind of get lumped into the psych rock scene, mm-hmm. psychedelic rock. Mm-hmm. And, like, I feel like the bands that we play with sometimes are a little bit, like, you know, wearing the bell bottoms and, like, acting like they live in 1970. And I really don't feel like we're like that. I
mean,
there's certainly, like, experimental psychedelic elements to our music, but it's, like, it's rough around the edges, it's mysterious, it's dark, it's heavy. I think we lean way more towards like Sabbath and Motorhead than we do towards like King Crimson.
Yeah, but all those
are influences, and I think it's just like heavy guitar-driven rock.
Yeah, so what got you started playing keyboard? Well, was that your first instrument?
It was, yeah. I think I just like, I had a keyboard in my house growing up, and my parents were supportive, and I was just drawn to it. Like, I remember like typing up menus of a set list for my parents, and I would like play little concerts for them in our house.
Oh, really?
I taught myself how to play like at a very young age.
What kind of stuff were you playing for them?
It was all classical concerts back then, and then
so
maybe
some. You're teaching yourself how to play classical music.
Yeah.
Like your interpretation of these classical.
I'm sure it wasn't spot on.
Yeah, I'm saying classical music's really complicated from what I've seen. You see those hands flying around.
And there was probably some like Tina Turner and like Whitney Houston there too, because my mom listened to all the divas.
Like that on the piano.
Yeah,
that's
like
awesome.
Singing and stuff. So
that's awesome. Did they ever sing along with you?
Yeah, I'm sure they did. It was like all memories are fuzzy, but especially those. So yeah, like that went on for a while, and then at some point they're like, "Let's get you lessons. Like you seem to like this," and. You know, good intentions, but my teacher just completely ruined it all for me. It was like one of those cases of, you know, slap your hand at the ruler. Like, she's very, very strict, and like, it wasn't fun anymore.
Yeah,
exactly. It was like homework. So I stopped for a long time, and then fast forward to high school, you know, freshman year, stoned off my gourd, sitting around with my friends, like, dude, we could start a band, man. Like, if you played something, what would you play? And like, I was like, oh, I used to play keyboards, that's right. And then I just dusted off the cobwebs and, like, retaught myself.
Wow. But you could teach yourself with a different intention this time.
Yeah,
you
know? No, there's no classical music that's happening this time
totally.
Around. I'm just
this
like,
just, now you made it, you know, pure fun.
Bleeps and bloops and, like, weird synth sounds. And just like, whoa, this sounded crazy, man. So.
So when you first started playing when you were in high school, was it that same kind of, like, psych rock kind of?
It was very much, like, Mars Volta influenced. Yeah, it was pretty much
like
a one-track thing.
I like playing Mars Volta with Pink Floyd. Those kind of, there's a lot of tracks there that just segue really nicely to each other.
Oh,
and I'm just
that was my shit.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I was a Mars Volta diehard. I mean, I've seen them 11 times. I would, like, I was, like, doing a Deadhead thing. I would, like, skip school and go see them play.
I was like that with the Pixies back
nice.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
So I totally understand. It's, like, just, especially when it's a show that just... something that makes you feel so excited and so enthralled, you know. I did the same. I would, like, leave class. I was going to school in Berkeley, and I would go up and down the state and see all the shows.
Yeah.
And then go back home.
Well, I'm sure the same thing for the Pixies, but, like, it's almost a whole universe with a band like that. It's like the people are a certain way, like the camaraderie, the... Mm-hmm. The live show itself is immersive, so it felt more like a cult
experience.
Than it did like a band. So that was a big part of my later musical upbringing. And then forayed into Southern hip hop and played hardcore for a long time. So all over the place. Yeah,
that's good. I mean, I think all musicians or music fans. I think if a music fan limits themselves to one genre, they're really, really limiting themselves because the musicians themselves have taken influence from all over. You know, obviously. So you just, I don't know, I'm all about learning and expanding anyway.
And, like, actually, you know, like, the internet is so important for that reason. I feel like I was looking up, like, what influenced the Mars Volta, and I was seeing what Omar and Cedric are into, and they're naming people like Fela Kuti and, like, Rasan Roland Kirk and, like, you know, like, weird experimental German bands that I'd never heard of before. Mm-hmm. So, and that, like, shot me off in all these directions I never would have gone in before.
Right, and they're interesting too because, I mean, Omar had a label, right? Doesn't he still have a label?
I don't know what he's doing these days. But.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, but I know he had a label for a while, and he was very much a mentor to a lot of bands, especially out of Mexico.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because he was so, bring these to the States, you have to hear these bands. These, like, weird art rock bands or, you know, whatever it happened to be.
They're like, Le Butcherettes was
Le
one
Butcherettes.
Of those.
I loved that.
They're great. You know, in the early days, I think we literally were just transcribing Mars Volta songs unintentionally. Like, you're, like, halfway through writing a song, like, this is so good. And then, like, oh, fuck, we're writing that song. Like, damn it. So, you know.
Which song of theirs were you ripping off unintentionally?
Gosh, I mean, back then it must have been, I don't know, something from the earlier albums.
Yeah.
I think eventually you find your own voice and you figure out how to shed the obvious influence.
You do, and I mean, I've had this conversation before. There are times where you just have so much in your head that you don't realize it's coming out.
Mm.
I have other musician friends, and I was notorious for this for a long time. They'd play me new music. I'm like, oh my god, that reminds me of blah blah blah. Like, oh, thanks, Mo. Great. I didn't know I'd stolen that from somebody. Yeah. I'm like, no, it's not exactly the same. And so when I hear about lawsuits, I think sometimes there are times where you can hear and feel it's a flat-out ripoff. You can lay a song on top of another song, and oh, my gosh, it's exactly the same.
Right.
But there are times where there are kind of little bits here and there that remind you of other things, and maybe they were inspired by, or maybe it was just in your system, that thing's in your system, and it manifested in this way.
Like, just like in cocktails or anything else, like, there is some, like, limit to what can be truly original. I think everything's sort of been done to some degree, and then we're just kind of, like, reshaping those little, you know, pieces that we have.
Exactly. So. Well, and that's, we've talked about that as well. It's like, there, how many times does someone think they invented a drink and then they find out it's been on a menu for like 30 years at some place in New York? Right?
Or it's, you know, at its heart, it's a sour, or it's a fix, or it's a cobbler, you know, it
totally.
Falls on one of the families.
Swap out one ingredient. Yeah. But it was a really great ingredient, you know, made something else. So when you started working in the spirits industry, you're a wine person. I mean, I won't say you're a wine person, but that's your main focus.
It wasn't always like that.
Yeah. So what got you started there? Was it like, I need to have a job to pay for this band business? Or
you know, the band thing's just always kind of like run alongside my restaurant industry career. And, you know, a struggle sometimes to like do two things that you really love very well. It's like splitting up your energy and your time is... You know, time management is something I'm always working on, and like staying organized, it doesn't work any other way. Yeah. But anyways, I started with knowing nothing about wine. I mean, I grew up in Northern California, and like I grew up with the Rinaldi family, who are like kind of like Barolo, like royalty, so Italian wine. So it was always kind of like the periphery of like my childhood.
What part of Northern California were you in?
Marin.
Marin? Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, it's wine country up there.
Totally.
So it was definitely, that and cheese must have been in your blood.
Yes. Funny enough, I'm not super big on cheese, but wine I like a lot. No, but like, so it was like, my parents liked drinking it, but it was never like in the forefront. And it, I especially started on the cocktail side of things. I think it wasn't until I did my Bar Smarts advanced, and Doug Frost is one of the people teaching the class, and he's one of the few people that's a master of wine and a master of spirits.
Oh, wow.
So
I was going to say, you don't see...
People kind of choose a lane, it seems like.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of, like, fascinated that someone, like, could do that, and me being, like, the rabid, like, focused person that I am, I was like... Fuck it. I'm like, why just be good at one thing? Let's be good at two things.
Yeah, totally.
So I just like, I think at that point, I just like started like spreading out like my search for knowledge into the two different lanes, if you will. Did my level one sommelier, and you know, during all this, I'm doing cocktail competitions and just trying to like, just trying to do all of the things, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Just master all of the booze.
Yeah, so then here I am now at Campfire, and I'm like really fortunate to be in a position where I can be creative behind the bar, but also like kind of shape the wine program there as well.
So what was your first bartending gig? What kind of place was it?
So the first restaurant job I had was at a fish market, which is kind of like a local chain. And I was much younger. I wasn't like
Up north or down here?
It was like Del Mar over here.
Del Mar, oh, okay.
Yeah, and you know, my sister of all people, she lives in Texas, but like even growing up, she's like, you'd be great in a restaurant. I'm like, nah, I don't know. Like. It just doesn't really seem like the life for me.
But you know what? Something you said earlier hearkened to this in talking about the Mars Volta experience and community and all of that, and being a musician. And I wish I could remember. I'll roll back into this later and be like, that's what it was that he said.
Yeah, yeah.
But it made me think of the bar family, the bar community.
Oh, totally.
And that kind of synergy that happens.
Yeah, like we're all misfits in a way.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally, totally. So, but there's also that hospitality angle that just about everybody I've met is just kind of good at that sort of, and always sort of was inclined towards that. So it's kind of funny that your sister saw this. So what were you doing for your sister that made her think this, I wonder?
I don't even know. Like, I was so young. I don't know what she saw.
Maybe it's because you're performing for your parents and everything, you know?
But yeah, I had a short stint at fish market. I hated it. And I walked out on the job 10 days later. You know, fast forward to me doing 8 years of every job you can possibly imagine. Like,
that was not bartending.
That was not bartending. Yeah. Retail. I worked at a Rite Aid, a Barnes & Noble. I worked for a dog trainer. I mean, I did a nonprofit organization. I was did everything. And then I just had this weird like kind of shift in my life. It was like around 2012 where I was like just really tired of like what I was doing. And there was a bar I would go to. It was called Iris. And it was like on the inside of the Torrey Pines Lagoon.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's like super quiet neighborhood restaurant. And I think I was just at the time I was drinking like, you know, gin and tonics or, you know, Jack Daniels or something like that. And the bartender let me try some Pappy. And that was like my first time really trying anything, like side-by-siding, you know, Jim Beam and Pappy 20.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck is this? And just like most things in my life, I just got set down the rabbit hole. And I ended up asking to work there. You know, went from dishwasher to host to server to bartender to bar manager, and ran the program there for 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how did it change there while you were there? Did it stay a sleepy neighborhood place? Did the neighborhood shift somewhat?
Yeah, the neighborhood never really changed. I think we changed a lot, or more so like...
You became a bit more of a destination for...
Yeah. The owners really gave me complete... freedom, and I mean like probably too much freedom at times. Like that, the program just changed with what I was learning. So I got really into fat washing and everything, and fucking duck fat in it. Like, you know, rosemary is burning on every cocktail, and like just, I went through all of the phases. I think people making cocktails.
So the seasonal menu upgrades just had to do with whatever you were.
I was the season. Yeah. So
was it during your time at Iris that you did Bar Smarts, that you tried?
It was. Yeah. It was later on. In the beginning, I was just reading books, watching YouTube videos, like watching Jamie Boudreau on YouTube.
What were the books that became your early Bibles?
You know, Dale DeGroff was definitely one of the people. And actually, David Wondrich is who I made my cocktails for at the Bar Smarts Advanced.
Oh, really?
Shaking like a lunatic making those cocktails
in
a little low hotel table. I found out about Death & Co. like a little bit later on, and that really started to shape like my perception of, you know, the importance of spirits and their flavor profiles, and just using things in the right amounts. And you know, I thought I knew a good amount of stuff, and then I got to Campfire, and I was like, okay, I need to like rebuild my entire library. But yeah, I like doing competitions, you know, learning just how to cook and prepare syrups and infusions and. It was a journey of, like, a lot
really
of self-teaching.
So you didn't really have a mentor. Yeah, I was going to say. You just sort of...
I had people that were really supportive. Zach Kramer, in particular, was kind of like my right-hand guy at Iris. He was the... He was more of, like, the spirits and beer guy, and I think we both kind of fell in love with wine at the same time. We did the tastings together for years. But he was always super, super supportive of me, and, yeah, just, like, kind of pushed me to, like, keep going, and I think kind of saw that I was going to outgrow that position eventually.
Well, that's good that he let you sort of outgrow that position, you know?
Yeah, and honestly, I might have stayed there if the restaurant hadn't have gotten sold under our feet. It was like a kind of like a hostile takeover thing at the end, which happens, you know?
Yeah, it's the business, you know.
You know, they fired me, and then everybody else quit on the spot, and then I luckily had already been talking to people at Campfire, so it was an easy
And how long has Campfire been open now?
3 years.
Yeah.
We got a commendation from the Michelin Guide. We got a Bib Gourmand, is, you know, it's not a star, but it's definitely
it's important. Notice.
Yeah, we're one of the first people in California to get named, so I think that's an accomplishment
really
in itself.
Which is really amazing, yeah. For sure. And so,
or I should say Southern California.
Southern California, yeah. And so, I mean, that's amazing. So I love that that finally there was a place to get craft cocktails. So tell me how you kind of moved from spirits, your focus being on that, to moving over to wines.
Well, I think because I was doing all of that at Iris, I was
you were covering all
equally
bases
focused
there.
On the spirits as I was the wine.
Yeah.
When I got to Campfire, I think I sort of became the wine guy because I was like
The one
I don't
want to
say I knew
knowledge.
The most, but I was like actively pursuing learning more about it, and like really passionate about it. And Lay, coincidentally, also was like really into it, and I think he just kind of saw an opportunity to like to pass off that off of his plate, so he could like kind of focus more on other things. And I've just been running with it, and so far so good. I feel like there isn't a lot of momentum behind natural wine in North County right now. It's all happening in South County, San Diego, so I'm like really proud to be putting them on the map.
Yeah, well, same thing, because in LA there are bars that are opening up that are only natural wines, you know, or shops that are focusing on that, selling that. So, you know, I mean, it's definitely been something out there. So, again, Campfire representing, getting North County up to speed.
Yeah, absolutely.
maybe we all just surf too much and we just kind of go, hey, man, whatever. Maybe that's what the issue is. I say with, like,
I don't know.
Two giant boards behind
There's
us.
Nothing wrong with this kind of place. And
no, I love all this stuff. But at the same time, I always wondered why it's taking so long for North County to have these options.
I don't know.
You don't have to be cooled if you're in San Diego. You can be cool and be in North County as well.
Yeah.
So your wine journey then, you mentioned earlier that you are a sommelier.
Yeah, I hesitate to say that. I mean, I took the first...
I don't understand the levels of sommelier-dom. So
there's like sort of different organizations that will provide you different certifications. Mm-hmm. The one that I started out in is the Court of Master Sommeliers.
Okay.
Have you seen the SOM documentary on Netflix?
Nope.
Okay. It's a great watch.
I should watch it anyway,
really fun to watch.
Because I am very curious about this kind of levels of learning within the spirits world. You know, because I know that beer has a...
Cicerone.
Yes, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And the first time I heard that, I was just like, wait, what? Then you can be like an expert at beer, like tested expert at beer?
Absolutely, yeah.
But it makes sense, obviously.
Yeah, so the court has four levels. There's introductory, which basically is just like a written test. Where is wine made? What's the weather like in that part of the world? What's the soil like?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, general qualities, general things about winemaking itself.
Yeah.
And you just pass a written test and that's it. That's what I did. Mm-hmm. After that, there's certified, advanced, and master. And I mean, it gets crazy starting at the next one. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's under 300 master sommeliers in the world, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was a small number.
Very.
So.
It's in, like the hardest test to pass in the world that I am aware of.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, these people spend...
The hardest test to pass in the world. Wait, like of all tests.
I heard that. I'm repeating that.
Well, I actually would love if that's true.
It could be true.
Like, you want to be a lawyer? It's easier than getting a proper master sommelier degree or whatever.
It's very difficult. And, like, these people dedicate their lives to it. And...
Yes,
I don't know.
I have heard of that, people taking it over and over and over and over.
Sure.
Wow. That's wild.
So I have no interest in really getting to that level.
Yeah.
And the court itself is a little bit dated in a way. Like, they are only just starting to acknowledge a natural wine as a thing at all.
They're very
much like... I don't want to, like, throw a bunch of shade at them, but they're kind of like the, you know, old white dudes sitting around a table, like, very stuck tradition.
Right, change takes some time and some pushing. We all know that in all aspects of our world.
And I just don't know how important that is anymore.
Well,
I feel like I've always kind of relied on street smarts and, like, all aspects of my life, so.
So it doesn't need to be approved by some committee.
I don't need a pin. I don't need letters behind my name, you know.
Yeah, so... Since I told you at the beginning that wine is a weak spot for me because as I got older, it gave me headaches and I pretty much stopped drinking it. And now there's natural wine that's all over the place. So what is natural wine exactly? What makes it different from the wine that we've known forever?
Yeah. So it's a kind of a buzzword right now. And
there's
a lot of misunderstandings about it. It's like a very hot topic.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like people could take advantage of that too.
Oh, sure.
For marketing purposes.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I guess the easiest way to think about it would just to be thinking of natural wine as, like, there's, from the time the grapes are growing out of the ground and by the time they make it into the bottle, there is the least amount of intervention in that process possible. I mean, you intervene when you need to stop bad things from happening, but there's no, you know, sprays going on the vineyard. There's no chemical manipulation of the wine to achieve a certain taste. Mm-hmm. There's no coloring added. There's just basically like the least amount of fuckery possible.
And it almost makes it sound like just organic wine.
Yeah.
You know, that's.
And there's
that kind
various
of...
boards that provide certifications, and, you know, every state differs law wise.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to Italy, people in Barbaresco and Barolo have been making natural wine because that's just how they make wine.
That's just how they make wine, right?
So, yeah. You know, I think people hear natural wine and they're thinking about Silver Lake and Suspenders. And,
I know, right?
You know, like, it's not only that. It's also people just making wine responsibly, like leaving the earth in a better place than it was when they started planting. Because wine is agriculture at the end of the day.
Oh,
it is
totally.
Food. Mm-hmm. The grape is a food. Yeah. So, you know, the chemicals you're spraying onto those grapes get into the water table, and the science is pretty convincing out there that these chemicals that are in our food and water supply are incredibly harmful. For me, it's not only just I think that natural wine is more vibrant and more alive in the glass, and it's like watching going from black and white TV to color. It's just like there's a certain like tangible energy in the wine. Mm-hmm. I believe that, but it's also for me a responsibility to, you know, taking care of the earth, because we want to be able to grow food and live in this place.
Yeah, I know, right? For as long as we have it, you know.
Right.
My father taught earth space science for 42 years,
cool.
So I've always kind of been on this tip.
Yeah.
My father also drinks a lot of wine, so I'm going to have to ask you later for some suggestions, because I can get him some for Christmas.
Yeah,
he would like this whole thing.
Cool.
But that's really amazing. So you feel, you know, learning this and teaching other people about this, I would think is productive in a global way.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the more people that appreciate and love natural wine, the better it is.
I just think it's a philosophy. I mean, it's like
we go
to Whole Foods and like we want gluten-free crackers. We want to know where if that chicken had a happy life. And it's like, why do we stop caring when it comes to this other thing that we put in our body in like great quantities?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. Like, let's carry it out all the way. You know, if
that's
we're going to
care
about everything else we put in our body, we should care about that too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's incredible. So let's roll back to cocktails real quick. Back when you were doing that, I always like to, especially when we've got musicians here, did you ever have any fun, like inspiration-wise with music into drink? Song titles are easy, like, this song made you think of tequila or something, you know what I mean?
Unfortunately, the thing that's coming to mind right now is when I had like a smoked cocktail and I called it Smoke on the Water, like such a dork, dude. I was like, funny, I was going through my Instagram, because I was like, trying to figure out when did I start bartending, and like, I was going through all of my like things I was so proud of, like Smoke on the Water, it was just like, such a dork. But
you know what though, that's kind of perfect for around here though.
Yeah.
It's a classic rock drink.
For sure.
There you go.
I mean, yeah, to answer your question, yes. I mean, there must.
I would love that, honestly. If I saw that and it was Smoke Cocktail, it was called Smoke on the Water, I would totally laugh and I would probably order it. What was the spirit that you used?
It was scotch, of course. It was kind of cool. Like, we smoked honey.
Yum.
Which was like a pretty like intrepid project for me then. But like, it was like a tattletale, basically, so like a smoked honey scotch old fashioned.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah.
I would be totally down. Yeah, that would make me laugh. And see, and there's something like, you look at it and you're sitting here with slight shame for like the low hanging fruit and everything.
Yeah.
However, I would suspect I wouldn't be the only one that would see that and get a chuckle out of it.
Yeah.
And smile.
Well, we're laughing about it now, so.
I know, right? So there, it gave somebody something, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah, and I think like inspiration cocktail-wise, like it's very much like I either start with a name and I flesh it out from there, or I'm just starting with a cool flavor combination and I go from there. It's like, it's usually one of those two.
Well, how about with the band? Like, I mean, we talked about like you're in a band and you work at a bar. There's very much of a family element to both of those things.
Yeah.
There are different kinds of relationships when you work behind the bar like that and when you're in a band. So how much within your band, like what's that songwriting process for you guys? Is it a very democratic thing or?
This particular project, like my style of keyboarding, I really just like to kind of be like the grout, be the glue. I like to come in at the very end and just like fill in the sound where it needs to be filled in. I do come to the table with song ideas occasionally, but I just like to be the salt and pepper.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing worse than a keyboardist who plays too loud, in my opinion, that just solos and thinks they're so cool. You don't look cool, friend. Trust
me. It's interesting you saying salt and pepper, because I tend to think of bitters. A girlfriend of mine told me this ages ago, bitters are the salt and pepper of
absolutely.
The cocktail world, right?
Absolutely.
So it's just, I don't know, you said salt and pepper, and like, oh, now we're back to food and drink.
It's all, it's very much like the same thing.
So when you are, I'm assuming this is going to be a wine answer, when you're just home relaxing, what are you listening to, what are you drinking?
I actually don't drink much when I'm at home. If I do,
said like a proper bartender.
Yeah, it's probably just like a shot in a beer.
Right, yep.
The wine I keep at home, it's like very special bottles, so I only bust them out like if I have a friend in town.
Yeah, yeah.
I went through a phase where I attempted to keep a home bar, and it was just not a fucking chance. Like, it just all got drank.
You know what's funny is I have my home bar, and it's actually a beautiful piece of furniture I got when I was in college, and I bought this piece of furniture more because it was a beautiful piece of Art Deco furniture from the 30s.
Yeah.
And it was a bar, and my friends used to say, you know, for somebody who doesn't drink that much, you have a home bar. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's true. And currently I have amazing stuff in this home bar, so that if I have friends over, I can make them things. But if someone's not over, I don't really touch it.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of sits there.
I think I'm just like, I'm around alcohol so much of my day. It's like when I go home, I just like don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, like, I tried to tell my husband, like, we should just drink at home sometimes because we're spending so much money going out drinking. Yeah. But I've got all this stuff. Let's just watch a movie and I'll fix this up a couple drinks.
Totally.
Let's do that at, like, every once in a while so I actually use this stuff up. Yeah. Doesn't gather dust. Well, then what is, throw out some natural wines that I should know about, one or two that I should get. Now, I'm assuming they come in white and red varieties,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, and I think, like, the pendulum sort of swings stylistically. Yeah. Like, you have really big, high-alcohol, powerful, like, extracted wines that are in favor, and then it swings to, like, lighter, lower-alcohol reds that are, like, really just easy to drink, and
let's
drink them cold.
Let's give us, like, a steak wine and a summer wine.
Great. right now, I'm loving Pax Mail is a Syrah producer.
Pax Mail?
Paxmaehle.
Okay.
Just say Pax.
I'm
P-A-X.
Like, there's an H in there. Come on.
So he's an amazing winemaker. Focuses mostly on Syrah, like the Sonoma Hillside, Sonoma Coast area.
Yeah.
And the wines are just like so like savory and like gamey. There's like cracked black pepper and rosemary and like roasted lamb and olive tapenade. And there's just like so much going on where it's like, that with any kind of like grilled barbecued meat, whether it's a burger or it's like a tomahawk steak, you're gonna have a great time.
Oh, you said tomahawk. I love me some tomahawk.
Me too.
So what should I be listening to while I'm eating that tomahawk and drinking that? What do you think?
I feel like with that, I would want to listen to...
Sounds kind of sexy, but
like
manly.
Some like Ted Nugent or something.
Oh, really? Oh my God, because of the tomahawk. Right?
Yeah, I don't know. I know he's a controversial, but like just like his riffs sometimes, just like I gotta listen
like
to
fat,
it.
Like, yeah, you know, big fat,
fat and gritty
riffs. Yeah.
And then on the other side, if you want to like do like kind of a lighter red, I had a really cool carbonic Cab Franc from Brock Cellars last week. I think it's
what
called
is it, Brock Cellars.
Yeah, B-R-O-C. Okay. Another great natural wine producer. I think the wine is called Cuckoo.
K-O-U-K-O-U,
and it's their glue glue, which means
glue glue.
Yeah, so this is the whole thing. It's it means glug glug in French.
Oh, that's
so
cute.
It's an onomatopoeia. Mm-hmm. It's the sound
totally.
Of you know. It's so easy glue-glue. To drink. Glug 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 glug.
So Cuckoo is glue glue.
Cuckoo is glue glue.
Okay, yeah. That's cute.
It's their style of like, it's like a light, low alcohol red wine that you can have it chilled, like just not have to think about it a whole bunch.
Yeah.
And like I would like, you know, poolside,
that potato
pool
chips.
Floaty, wear some like audacious sunglasses and like Palm Springs, throw some hot dogs on the grill and like,
and do that.
You're having a party.
Okay, so if you're drinking that, floating in a pool with some Palm Springs, then you're probably playing some house music or something. I don't know. What are we listening to with that one?
Ooh.
Just set something up.
Let's bring it back to Mars Volta. Throbbing Gristle is like this like super...
You would listen to Throbbing Gristle while drinking
I'm weird,
this?
Man. I know we just met each other, but...
I think that's okay. Awesome.
That's a little aggressive. Let's do like...
Well, there might be the right Throbbing Gristle
song for
Shakira.
Some like old Shakira.
Oh, that my family's Colombian, so you've warmed my heart. Okay. However, to go back to Throbbing Gristle, you know that they are... I mean, before they would perform, they would play like Martin Denny albums.
Yeah.
And Arthur Lyman, because they were so into the Exotica and everything.
Yeah.
So.
Exotica is great.
Right? So you are not terribly far away. You're more abstractly putting that vibe into the Palm Springs scenario right there.
Yeah.
See? So you're not totally
contrast.
Crazy. Yeah. You're not. So yes, I just met you, but I like the way your brain works.
Sweet.
That's really messed up and interesting.
Nice.
Very cool. Well, on that note, I think we can wrap it all up and everything.
Great.
Thank you for meeting with me and let people know where they should find you. I don't know if you have any tips you want to offer to anyone about natural wine, just to educate folks some more, since it is a hot topic right now and people are learning.
You know, I would just say find a wine shop with people that you like that work there and just, like, follow what they're into.
Go grill them.
If you're in San Diego, Vino Carta and The Rose are the two places I would go. LA always has Helen's and a bunch of places like that.
Yeah.
I don't know where you are listening to this, but,
it's
popping up everywhere.
Yeah, totally.
I would like, on the cocktail side of things, again, I just want to shout out Lay and kind of our lineage with Sasha Petrovsky and Milk and Honey. If you're just getting into cocktails, that's where I say you need to go.
Yeah,
like, kind of learn your fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Instagram, Nick Makes Drinks. My band is called Drug Hunt. Recording our full length in about a month here.
Ooh, cool.
We do everything just like straight to tape.
Yeah.
One live take, all vinyl. So,
amazing.
Come find us.
Do you guys have like a Bandcamp, SoundCloud, anything like that?
We're on Instagram, Facebook, the whole deal.
So people have to wait to listen to it until you're ready.
We do have some songs on Spotify. We are kind of trickling out our EP right now.
Yeah.
Drug Hunt.
People can get
it's out there.
A sneak peek at that time.
There's a video on YouTube. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you again so much to Nick for sitting and chatting with me way back when you could still do such a thing with someone that you didn't really know very well. I was really happy to get to talk to him and learn some things about natural wine. Hopefully you learned something as well. And just so you know, if you are in the San Diego area, Campfire, where you can find Nick, is open. They are doing their best to pivot with the rapidly changing times. At the moment, they are reservation-based. I'm sure if you check the website and Instagram, you can be as current as these times allow for us to be. So they do occasionally have walk-ins at their bar, which is partially outdoors, so you might check that out too. They've got great domestic natural wines, really good cocktails, and Nick does make cocktails too, as he mentioned, so I can recommend going there. So give Campfire a look, and if you go there, say hi to Nick safely from a distance with your mask on. That's all I gotta say about that. But we're not done yet, because we have a track. I say we as if there's more than just me. I have a track to play you from Nick's band. They are called Drug Hunt, and the song is called The Tower.
Yeah.
So Drug Hunt wanted to play live. They were releasing an EP before all this went down, as you heard us talking about. But, you know, no one can do any live shows right now. So what the band did was they got together at the beginning of quarantine to film a community fundraising live performance video. And they debuted two more songs from the forthcoming full length and raised over $1,300 for local organizations working on COVID relief, social justice causes, and local venues in danger of closing due to the shutdown. You can actually see the video, which is up on YouTube, on Drug Hunt's YouTube channel. And the best way to support and enjoy the music is to purchase the vinyl of their self-titled EP, which can be found. You can find the link on that YouTube channel, and you can find it on digital music platforms like I did. You want to support these folks any way we can right now during this time. That is Drug Hunt, and thanks again to Nick Sunutko for sitting with us today. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.